Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 150, recorded on February 18th, 2012. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Well, usually as usual. I've been kind of hit and miss lately.
Yeah?
But
jacking up the schedule because you've been doing cool things.
But that's true.
You did something in Vegas, right?
Yeah, I was in Vegas. HP was doing a bunch of stuff there, so I was out hanging with their crew.
Cool. Anything iOS related to report, or was it mostly like new ink cartridges?
The new iOS stuff that they said we already know, which is that they've been working really hard to make sure all their printers are AirPrint compatible.
Cool.
And I think as of now they all are. And all their executives when they're on stage talking about products, and they talk about, and you can use any mobile device to do whatever with our technology. They all absentmindedly reach in their pocket and pull out their smartphone, like people do, and every one of them pulled out an iPhone.
Uh-huh.
So there you go. That's
because
all.
You can't AirPrint, or because some
no,
of them-
because even at HP, everyone thinks the iPhone's the best phone.
Oh yeah, that is fun. I don't know. Maybe those people don't realize that they already have their own smartphone. That HP has one.
Well.
Or do they? Is the pre discontinued? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's dead.
Yeah, okay. So they don't have a pre. Why would they have a pre?
Yeah. And Meg Whitman, the CEO, she told everyone that WebOS is alive and going strong, but the words really meant, we've totally abandoned this redheaded stepchild.
Yeah. Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast, in case you didn't already guess that.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Did you feel like
they still list the pre on their website, though?
Do they?
Along with their calculators, which I find very interesting.
Oh, wow.
HP smartphones and calculators share the same page. They have the Palm Pre 2 and the HP Veer.
Okay,
That's kind of telling, don't you think?
How do I get to this shop? Okay, now HP.com, explore and create.
Although when you click through to the actual store, you can't buy one. So it's probably just the support pages.
How do I get to this? You say calculators and mobile phones. Where do I get this?
Shows you how much a part of their business smartphones there. I just put the link in the chat. It's large. hp.com/large/products/handhelds.html.
Ooh, graphing calculators, financial calculators, and software solutions for PC, iPhone, and iPod Touch.
Then you have to go to hp.com/large.
Yeah, I got it.
/products.
No, I see it. I see the.
Oh, you see the Palm Free.
I don't know what the Veer is. I don't think I ever heard about that.
That's quite telling, don't you think?
Yeah. All right. So, biggest news of the week. Apple unceremoniously released the first developer preview of OS X Mountain Lion. And the reason why we bring it up here is because the primary focus, at least according to Apple, for innovation in Mountain Lion is based on the iPad. So we got quite a few things that they're including based on iPad and iOS stuff. We got Notification Center, which has been something that has been a void in the Mac OS for a long time. The ability to have pop-up notifications in sort of a unified way. And that's primarily been resolved with Growl, right? I think, do we all use Growl?
No, I hate freaking Growl.
Yeah,
it's
Jeff?
The lamest piece of thing ever.
I love Growl.
I'm going to get a bunch of emails. I really don't believe that. I really don't like it, though. But it's just me personally not liking a bunch of notifications like going off all over my computer screen all the time.
I like
it. I know
it.
You can like tailor it and tweak it, but it's just, you know, I don't know. I don't need another thing to distract me when I'm working on my Mac.
I need to know when someone signs in and then signs off and then signs back into iChat. Exactly. I really, really need to know that. Actually, you know what? You know what's great, Adam? Here's why you would like to use Growl. For Hardware Growler, which is an extension. Have you used that? Have you checked that out?
The only hardware growler that I deal with are the ones that I get from the brewery over there.
Well done.
Well done. No, so the okay, so you can set it up so that whenever you plug in anything to your Mac, it can be power, it can be a USB device, FireWire, whatever, network changes, airport, all that stuff, it'll notify you, kind of like Windows style.
Why do you need that?
Michael just ruined the whole thing right
I did.
There.
I screwed it up. I shouldn't have mentioned Windows. I'm sorry.
No, you're making my point for me. Thank you.
No, I love it. I love knowing when something has been properly recognized by my computer.
You love knowing that you just plugged in a FireWire cable to your Mac because you just did it.
So what you're telling me is I have some
tell you that it did
some oddly repressed holdover from my Windows days that I really desperately need that. And what you're saying is I should know just by the simple fact that I just plugged in my iPhone that I plugged in my iPhone.
Yes.
And that I don't need to be notified that I plugged in my iPhone.
Yeah.
I don't know if I believe you. I think I need to know.
There was a time when Hardware Growler was actually really useful for me because I was working with a lot of accessories that I was having problems with, and it was related to drivers and stuff. And Hardware Growler made it really easy for me to know very quickly if a device was connecting properly or was just dropping off when it shouldn't. So in a very specific window of time, Hardware Growler was handy. Yeah. And then not.
Maybe it comes from the fact that, you know, I'm old and come from the early days of the internet before we had like pop-up blockers. And I just learned to hate anything that came up in front of whatever I was trying to focus on and not being able to make it go away. And so I feel like, why would I want to perperpate that back on myself on purpose?
Yep, I don't know. You can tweak it down to whatever you want, I guess. I just like knowing when sometimes my IP address will change inexplicably. Or my favorite thing is, and people will say I'm wrong on this, but I'm the one who told everybody in the iPhone dev team community, I figured out DFU mode.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had not Hardware Growler, but Peripheral Vision, which is an older thing that doesn't work on Snow Leopard and after that, but I was screwing around with rebooting and different combinations of restarting my iPhone to get it into recovery mode in one day, and it showed up and said DFU mode, and I said, well, what's that? And then a little while later, I saw that people were searching for this rumored direct firmware upgrade mode, and then I realized, oh, that's what that was, and I told somebody. And now that's how we jailbreak our phones. But so there's one use for it. Anyway, so going back to what we're talking
Growl, about. Just for the record, Growl is an awesome thing. I just choose not to use it. I know a lot of people really love it.
Okay, so you're not excited about bothers me. You're not excited about Notification Center in Mountain Lion?
Yeah.
I like
it's cool that it's there. I'm glad that it's there for people. I don't know how much I will use it. And even if you looked at my iOS devices, I have most of my notifications turned off, not only for battery reasons, but just because there's a select few things that I really actually want to be notified about. But it's great that you have the option to totally customize that stuff. And that's what's cool about something like Growl, too. But Growl, I think it's better that it's built in, and hopefully more people will use the built-in thing, because that is one of my complaints that I've had classically about Growl, is it's this other third-party thing. And the other problem was, for a while, I don't think too many people do this anymore, developers would bundle it in and install it for you and not tell you about it. And that always
crappy thing.
Yeah. But okay, so the way the Notification Center works, in case you haven't already seen this, you get growl, very much growl-like notifications on the top right-hand part of your screen. They come in and then leave a few seconds later to let you know that maybe a calendar appointment just came up or you got a new email or something like that. And if you want to see the notifications center, as you can on your iPhone by pulling down from the top, you swipe over with two fingers on your trackpad to pull that up. And I assume you can customize it to whatever you want, but you swipe over and then you see all those previous notifications, which I think I might get some use out of that. So I don't know if I really need to know, have a little log of how many times someone signed in and out of iChat, but I assume you can tweak that as you can in iOS.
So if that's the case, then how do I go forward and back in Safari?
I don't know. I use Snow Leopard, so I know how to go back and forward in Snow Leopard, and I didn't they?
But isn't that a two-finger swipe? Didn't you just say it's two-finger swipe now to pull out Notification Center?
Yeah, isn't it three-finger swipe back and forward for Safari? Oh no,
that does your in Lion. That does your whole that switch between full screen mode.
Really? Three-finger swipe back and forth?
Yes.
Oh, that's stupid.
See, we're running out of gestures. Actually,
hurts.
Well, this is a great conversation that I had at Macworld with Ken Case when I interviewed him, because we were talking about, you know, what they were trying to do with their apps, and they were all excited about multi-touch gestures and all the things that they could, you know, do with it and leverage, and like we could have all these great gestures to do all these kinds of things. And when they actually got into active development and started looking at usability and how the apps worked and stuff like that, they quickly realized that, well, if we do that, we're going to have this whole, and Apple, I think, is having this problem now. We're going to have this whole training on how you do these different gestures and what works where in what app. And he said, so then we just realized, nope, if you can't do it, on iOS with one finger, and this was specifically related to iOS, but I think the same thing applies on the Mac, is you know, it's going to be one finger, and on occasion, standard two-finger gestures like pinch to zoom and those sorts of things. But if you have to start teaching everybody a gestural language, and then that language suddenly becomes OS version specific or application specific or something like that, that you lose a lot of usability. So multi-touch is great, but if multi-touch doesn't work universally the same way across the app or the OS, then you start to have problems. I mean, people are going to get very confused, and I think this is a great example of that. So I'm used to having two fingers swipe left and right, you know, go forward and back in different applications. And now it's going to do something completely different.
Well, okay. Yeah, totally. I completely agree.
It's
so
not
firstly,
a problem for
firstly,
else.
I 1000% agree. So really right now, the only application on my Mac that I use that has any special multi-touch gestures is Reader.
Yep.
And I really like the way Reader does it. So it's three finger up, down, back forward to do some various things, and it works really well. Unfortunately, right now, or initially, I wanted to use, so I do four finger down to give me all expose.
Yeah.
As it's been set up, that's how it was in Snow Leopard. Yep. And I figured, hey, I use app expose a lot, so I want to use three finger down for that. But that's a thing in Reader, like I said. So I've been using Better Touch Tool for a long, long time, ever since it came out, really. And that works really well for me, and you've got all these custom gestures. I don't know. It definitely is a problem. You have to, I like being able to set it up the way I like it. And the way it is now on my computer, I use it like crazy. I'm gesturing like crazy on my computer, but I know what the gestures are because I set them up. And I guess that it seems like they've been changing them. They've changed them when they went to Lion, and now they're changing them in Mountain Lion, because now you have this two finger back thing that used to work in Safari and wasn't a thing in.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, Reader is another great example, because, you know, if you go into the gesture settings in Reader, it's going to tell you, hey, if you're going to use this three finger thing, then you got to go into mouse and trackpad and turn off those other things. So,
oh, it does do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in, you know, because in line you have swipe between pages with the with three finger.
I did notice that. So it wasn't that it wasn't a problem in Snow Leopard,
right?
But it was in Lion.
Yeah, and I've talked to iOS developers that have had the same issue because they wrote things into their app for cool like four finger gestures or whatever, and now Apple has its, you know, OS four finger gestures, and if you have those enabled, they supersede anything the developer is going to do, obviously. So
right, yeah.
You know, suddenly, you have people and they have a feature that they liked in their app, and now it's not working because Apple's commandeered the gesture.
And there are a lot of apps now that you open up and it says, "Hold on, you have multitask gestures enabled. Go back and disable them before you do anything." And then
right, now but I really like those multi-touch gestures, so now you're in a quandary.
Yeah, and then suddenly I don't know how to use my iPad when I turn that off.
So
my head hurts.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, it's cool that they're doing these things in bringing some of this stuff to Mountain Lion, but it's going to cause problems for some developers, like, you know, the Reader folks or other people, even Apple themselves, like I'm pointing out with Safari.
They're definitely having problems. Yeah.
We just learned a learned a certain gestural language, and now you're changing the rules. You know, it's like somebody taught you English and then they're suddenly like, well, now throw that out. We're going to change the rules. And now we're using English 2.0.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
I don't understand you. Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. So in addition to Notification Center, we've got Game Center, which is exactly what it seems like it would be on your Mac. So it's Game Center on your Mac. You get Share Sheets, which initially I saw it and I thought, okay, that's dumb. We've been able to tweet things and we've been able to email and what else? It's emailing, bookmarking, right? You want to help me out, guys?
Yeah, sorry. I'm dealing with, there's noise, and if anybody heard that, I hope they didn't. My machine was like beeping at me.
Oh, no, didn't hear any of that.
Sorry, I wanted to get it turned off.
Yeah, I'm looking for these share sheets. All right, add to reading list, add to bookmarks, email, send with iChat or messages, and do a tweet. So really the only new thing, I guess, would be the messages and Twitter. So initially I thought, okay, that's dumb. We could already do that from the menu bar. And then I realized, oh, yeah, every time I want to go to email someone a link to a page, that's always a, okay, where is it? Okay, file, send what? Oh, send contents? No, send link. Okay, I do that. And so I guess this is a nice pullover from iOS because you never had that button up there. You have the add to bookmarks, right? But see, now that means you have two clicks if you want to add something to bookmarks. So I guess that's not a huge deal. I guess we'll see how that works. But you click on the little share, the action sheet button, and you can do things including doing Twitter. So there's now Twitter built in, of course, into Mountain Lion. So you get the tweet sheet for tweet-friendly apps, I guess. You have to have a tweet-friendly app in order for that to work because they're modal per app, not modal per... like for the entire computer. Know what I mean?
No. Yeah, I know. I know what you mean. But again, going back to what Jeff was saying, this is, some of this stuff's going to make my head hurt at first. I have to, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of the person too that I haven't signed up for the Mac Developer Program yet.
Yeah, do that.
I think I'm going to be doing that, especially since you can virtualize Mountain Lion.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, you can run it in Parallels and I think VMware.
Yeah, I'm probably going to have to get on that. Okay, so you also get Notes, which finally, I don't understand why they never had a standalone Notes application. It was always crammed into Mail.
Because no one could ever do anything like that before. Oh, wait, to the original Palm Pilot. Never mind.
Yes. Yeah. This is the best part about Mountain Lion, in my opinion, is the standardization of, this is where they're going. So where with gestures, they're making things, I think, more confusing for the apps and cross-compatibility between iOS and OS X on the built-in app side. I think this is absolutely the right move.
Totally. And it's inevitable, too. And it makes a lot of sense. You also get reminders too. There's a reminders application that, so the notes application syncs with your iCloud account, and reminders also syncs with your iCloud account. So whenever you make a note or a reminder on either device, it syncs right across as you would expect it to.
Right. So to-dos come out of iCal. To-dos come out of mail.
Finally.
Notes come out of mail.
Yep.
Messages is consolidated. iChat goes away.
Okay, so now let's talk about messages. So messages, yeah. iChat is being renamed to messages.
No, iChat's being replaced with messages.
Well, yeah, yes and no. It's not that we're getting rid of, it's being combined with iMessage. Let's say
That's fair enough.
Yeah, I'm because actually not happy about that so far. I'm hoping that's just something that is fixed at some point along the way inside the beta, but probably won't be in this version, the version that launches with Snow Leopard.
What needs to be fixed? I haven't really messed with it.
Well, you still have, so you have the messages window, which is like iMessage stuff, and it's totally different than the AIM and all the other stuff. So it looks like iChat, but with iMessage thing kind of thrown into it as another kind of window. You know how you always had different windows for the different services you would use?
Right. So,
but they all look the same. Like AIM looked the same as
Bonjour and Jabber.
Bonjour, you know, whatever service that you wanted to throw up there, where it was this, you know, this kind of single column list. And then when you were chatting with somebody, it would open up into kind of a new window.
Right. Yeah. You can, in all your chats now, I think with Lion, they consolidated chats, so it's chatting with tabs, and it worked really well because you could set the width of the tabs on the side of the different people you're talking with, and you can just set your window really nicely the way you want it.
Yeah, now it all kind of goes into this new main message window, but the messages part, I guess I don't have, there's not like a list, a buddy list, I guess is the only thing that's missing from messages, which makes sense. There never was one there. So you just have kind of your conversations that are going on.
Now I have my buddy list showing,
but that's just your standard. That's your standard AIM buddy list, right? Like you don't have a contact list.
Oh,
like if I want to start a new quote unquote iMessage, right? I can start that, and I do it more like the iOS way, where I have a toolbox in the main message window, and I start adding people in.
Yes.
You don't have a list of contacts. You have to start typing.
I don't know. It just seems weirdly hybridized to me, I guess.
Yeah, I think it seems a little bit thrown together right now.
Yeah, and I'm hoping at some point it becomes more consistent. Like, I don't know, maybe even the buddy list. I guess with other services, though, you want to know if your buddies are online, whereas opposed to iMessage, there's not really this concept of online. So I don't know. It just, it seems like it could be better integrated. I don't know how, but it seemed to me like I have my old iChat stuff kind of bolted onto a new message app, or vice versa. They took iMessage and just kind of bolted on, figured out a way to bolt on messages.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like ground up thought out as a new app.
Totally. Well, and I mean, let's just go back to what was happening earlier today. You sent me, I was chatting. No, firstly, well, okay. So you sent a message to me from one email address, which I don't usually talk to you with, and then I replied, and then you sent me another message from another email address, and so we had like three chats going on. So I was initially chatting with you two with like iMessage, I think phone number based iMessages,
right?
And then it kept splitting out because you kept trying to message me with different things on your computer, and it wasn't working for some reason.
Yeah, I was playing with testing like how this works and if it really works seamlessly, and we had started a multi-way conversation on I think what amounts to SMS, right? But it flips over to iMessage. So
yeah,
we had kicked it off with phone numbers from an iOS device, I'm guessing your iPhone. And that stuff was showing up, I think, on my iPad, because that had been already set up with the iMessage. And then I think iMessage came out later in the week, and I popped it open, and that conversation was not in my Messages app on OS X. So I thought, well, you know, I wonder how we get it, if you can get it over here, or if it'll be integrated. And so I just set up a new conversation with you and Jeff in it through iMessage, which I'm assuming is using your email addresses. And when I replied to it, I noticed that the messages did come in on the iPhone and the iPad, but on iMessage on the desktop, the responses from you guys were still only going to my iOS devices, not back to messages on my Mac. And then at some point they flipped over, but I'm guessing that's because you guys replied from a different device or from the Mac or something. I don't know. Now they're all integrated, but it didn't happen seamlessly, that's for sure.
All right, and I'm assuming that means that I don't have the addresses that you were sending info from. Because
well, you're in the thread now. Your last message that you sent over is now going to all my devices.
Yes, but I'm seeing all of this only on my iPhone.
Interesting.
So, yeah, and I so I have two chats, three group chats now that are all part of the same thread, and they have... Each one has different parts of it, and it's only on my iPhone. So I bet if I go and add in the addresses, then my chats will start blending together.
Let me ask you guys this. So you, exactly. So you guys don't have consistent addresses in the account settings across all of your iMessage, all your messages apps.
Well,
am I making any sense?
Well, they're all supposed to reference the same address book.
No. So when you go to set up your messages account, right, I set mine up on my iOS devices with my iCloud email address. But then you can add in additional email addresses. But I think part of the problem is that those additional email addresses are tied per device. Or per, you know, on your Mac, it's going to be on your Mac. So if you only have some of the email addresses on your iPhone and different ones on the Mac and different ones on the iPad, I think the messages will only go consistently to the ones that all have the same email address tied to the app on the device.
Okay, so...
Does your head hurt yet?
Very much hurts. I don't know what we're talking about.
We have a name for this episode, My Head Hurts.
Yeah.
This is stuff that... It's a good conversation to have, though, because Apple keeps doing these things that are very un-Apple-like, where this is way more complicated than it needs to be.
Totally.
Why when I add an email to my iMessage account, is it... per device? Why doesn't that just sync to all of my iMessages? And because that's what I've tried to do, is make sure that I have all of my email addresses where I would want to receive iMessages at, or have people be able to find me on iMessage. I make sure that every one of my devices has those email addresses registered to the Messages app.
Well, you know, I was under the
app by app to do it. Sorry, or device by device, excuse me, to do it.
Right.
I was under the impression that with iMessages, that when we switch over on our iPhone, we would somehow link up our phone numbers, since we're using iMessages with our phone number, and we also have this iCloud account, we would be able to message people on our iPhone, and then those messages would also be synced up on our iPad. So we're messaging a little bit on our iPhone, and then, oh, I want to move over to my iPad, back and forth, and all those messages are synced, and that's never been the case.
It's not working.
Doesn't work at all. Yeah.
Here's the pieces that are slowly coming together for me. First, if you start a messages conversation with someone on your iPhone and they have an iPhone as well, it doesn't matter if you have your caller ID set up as an email address on your iPhone. Your messages caller ID set up as an email address, it always binds to your cell phone number. And even if you had started it with their email address, that conversation will be bound only to your iPhones, and you will not see it on any other device running messages. If, however, you start that conversation with someone on one of your other iOS devices or your Mac, even if you start it with that iPhone user's phone number, it will show up properly on all the devices. Now, based on what we have done today, if you do not have all of the email addresses in your address book for the person that is sending you a message, and they just happen to use one of their other email addresses as their caller ID that for that call, it will show up as a separate conversation, and will not synchronize properly.
Yeah. Okay.
So what I'm trying to do now is use my new iCloud account in the messages setting as the caller ID for my email on all of my devices.
Yeah, and
just me personally trying to somehow hope that that will result in some sort of consistency.
This is dumb, and I don't want to talk about it anymore. Apple needs to fix it. Just fix it, Apple. Make it good. Make it Apple-like. This is very un-Apple-like, and it's hurting my head. But
I think.
Yeah, so there's some other cool stuff in Mountain Lion. AirPlay mirroring, which is something that is a glaring exclusion from Lion, I thought we were for sure going to get AirPlay with at least QuickTime. You know, the only thing we can AirPlay right now is stuff in iTunes, and you'd think you'd be able to very easily put AirPlay into QuickTime. So right now, as it is, you can only AirPlay your entire screen. You AirPlay mirroring via a menu item, which is a good start, and it does mirror not only the screen but also audio. So you then they've shown in the demos that you can mirror stuff like video. You can actually play a video on your Mac and it'll show up on your Apple TV. So that means finally you'll be able to very easily do some Hulu if you want. You don't have to plug in your computer if you want to just Hulu some stuff from your Mac. Excited about this?
I think it's pretty cool. I'm excited in that it makes it a lot easier to connect to video devices without cables.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
I was just going to say I'll be more excited when they get my Apple TV ad hoc networking fixed so that I can actually use this for doing presentations when I go to like user group meetings and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, because they do say, oh, you can use it for presentations. Not really.
Well, you can if you take your Apple TV and you can get on the same Wi-Fi network. But, you know, if you're at a place where you don't have Wi-Fi, a great way that I would get around this was just set up an ad hoc network with my MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
And connect through that, you know, through the Apple TV. And that worked great up until the 4.4.4 release of iOS. And now it's broken or I can't get it to work consistently. So
awesome.
Cool.
So hopefully they'll fix that. But I mean, for that kind of thing, yeah. I mean, that's gonna be great.
Yeah,
yeah. And see, that's why I said no. You go ahead because I was pretty sure that's where you were heading.
I'm also hoping that they do add AirPlay to just standard video stuff, so QuickTime in Safari and all that. So we don't have to mirror our entire screen because you don't really need to mirror your entire screen for that kind of thing. And I think that actually. Well, you can do that right now with some third-party applications, right? You can use AirFlick. Have you guys used that?
I have not, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think it's an Erica Sadoun production.
To do like, to do which now? Because I get confused on which way we're going.
To the Apple TV from a Mac.
Just regular AirPlay like video?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just got an app. Which one am I using? You talk about Erica's thing, and I'll tell you which one I started using.
Okay, so AirFlick is just an app that you can either drop audio, video, or an image or PDF onto this little hotspot in the app, or you can pull in a movie URL. So, for example, when I was watching Endeavor Land, when it did that last year, I just tossed in the URL for the NASA live stream that works on the iPad. I tossed that into AirFlick, and it worked perfectly on the Apple TV. So yep. It's cool for that. Or just regular movies or whatever, but you can't. It's not as easy as opening up QuickTime and clicking the little AirPlay icon and having it go there.
Yeah, I'm using AirServer.
Okay.
An app called AirServer, and I can't remember if I got it through the Mac App Store or what, but it runs as a menu bar item.
Ooh.
And then I can just like send stuff. It just shows up. So I'm like now my Mac Mini, which is connected to HDTV, just looks like an AirPlay destination. So I can send.
Okay. So this makes your Mac into an AirPlay destination, not not sending. So it's receiving, not sending on your Mac.
Correct. So that's where I was getting confused. So you're talking about AirFlix sends from my Mac to an iOS device?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, yes. To Apple TV exclusively, because that's what Apple TV does.
And it works really well.
So is Air Server free?
No, I think it was $4 or $5, but it works really well.
It looks cool. Yeah, I just started using Airfoil on my Mac.
For audio, yeah.
Yeah.
Airfoil rocks. I use Airfoil all the time. I use Airfoil with Pandabar to do Pandora.
Uh-huh. Or like you can use Simplify too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Air Server looks like you need to buy it through PayPal.
I don't know. It was $4 or $5 and it works really well. It's been working well for me and it was a great solution to be able to send AirPlay stuff from any of my devices over to but the Mac Mini connected, you know, like as a home theater system. Yeah.
Cool.
But now I will I not need that with Snow Leopard?
No.
I mean Mountain Lion?
Mountain Lion.
Holy crap.
No, see, because that you're going the wrong direction again.
Yeah.
Because this receives and Mountain Lion sends a mirror image of your computer to your Apple TV.
Yeah, so when are they going to roll in, you know, they need to roll that in to iOS and Mac where it shouldn't matter which way you want to go. Ultimately, we should be able to have anything as a source to and anything as a destination as long as it's running iOS or
totally. OS, I mean, OS 10. I do that on my iPhone. I have through Jailbreak, you can download the little program that runs in the background on the Apple TV and it can AirPlay some audio to my iPhone. So then I have kind of in the same way you can just do it with AirFoil speakers.
It should just be built in.
I agree. Totally. They can already do it. Anyway, all right, let's move. We're moving slowly here. So we got.
It's because we're bitching a lot.
Yeah. That could be the name of the show. iOS 5.1 pre-GM seed has possibly been obtained by Blogdo iPhone, which again.
Wait, pre-GM seed?
Yeah.
You know, back in the old days, we'd call that beta.
Yeah. Well, the only
point,
difference.
Jeff.
Yeah, totally. I agree. But the two differences they say are in here are there's a Japanese Siri, which is something that's been rumored. And I think Siri even admitted to being able to speak Japanese if you ask it. At least at some point it could. And the current way you get to the current shortcut to getting to the camera is the double click of the home button and then you press the camera button. Now in this, according to these guys that I've never heard before, they have photos of the slide to unlock screen, the standard thing being slightly tweaked where there's always a camera icon there with a little, with some lines around it to indicate that you can pull it up. And if you swipe it up, then you're able to get right to the camera app. In the same way you have that shortcut, now you don't have to double-click the home button, which makes a lot of sense that Apple would want to do that, because I feel like a lot of people who have the iPhone, who don't like read about the iPhone all the time, don't know that you can do that. And this puts it right there for you and makes it very apparent.
So I haven't seen the screenshot. So where is the little camera icon sit? Does it sit just to the right of the slide to unlock, like as if I double tapped, or is it someplace else?
Yeah, it's right there. It's in the same way, except it's not so much a button as it is a little glyph and with a graphic indicating that you can slide it up. I sent you a link to it.
Cool.
And I think it's a good idea. Jeff, have you seen this?
I'm clicking the link right now.
Okay.
Oh, so I see.
It's got the little
like handles.
The little handles that like the keyboard would have.
Right.
Nice.
Okay. Well. Okay.
Yeah.
And it, I'm assuming the slide up is just so you don't accidentally tap it.
Yeah. But I wonder how far you have to slide it before it's not accidental. You know what I mean?
Is accidentally tapping the camera icon a big problem for a lot of people?
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking not. So it seems like extra steps.
Yeah,
it would
like,
be.
Why not just have the camera button there like it is when you double tap and just have it there all the time?
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, I don't agree.
Simpler is always better. It seems like Apple's doing a lot of things UI-wise that are just making things more complex when they don't really need to be. And, you know, and in the past, they would be like, screw it, you know. It might be annoying that 0.1% of people are going to accidentally tap the camera button and they're going to have to go, you know, press another button to go back to the home screen. But I think the experience of I turn my screen on, there's the button, I tap it, and my camera launches, that simplicity is more desirable to me than
but it's not the fear that
I'm going to accidentally bump the camera button.
You're not having to do anything more, really. You're putting your finger on the screen and you're just moving it a little bit.
So you're having to do something more.
It's two because steps
instead
versus
of a quick
one.
Tap. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Apple used to be adamant always about oversimplifying, even to the point where maybe some people wouldn't like it. And now they're going the other way, which I think only causes confusion for more people than it solves for the other people. I don't know.
I agree, you learn it all, but
I think the point is that the whole genesis, the reason why I'm an Apple Mac user is because everything's supposed to be simple and intuitive. And anytime that you add extra steps into something, I'm fine with that, but there needs to be a really good reason for it. And I'm assuming the reason here is, you know, we don't want people to accidentally press the button. But in my mind, I don't know that I would accidentally hit that camera button if it was sitting there just, you know, because you have to press a button. You're not anywhere near that button to wake up your phone. You either have to press the sleep wake button or the home button, or you have to do something to get the screen to come on, and your finger's not likely to be right in that area.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. Sorry. And what part of those little bars tells the average user?
Yeah, slide up.
Slide up. And I'm not seeing anything in there that indicates to me if I slide that camera that I can use my phone or I can use the camera. What I'm seeing is a little button that I would push and get really pissed off because my goddamn camera isn't turning on.
All right, let's move on.
Michael, it sounds like we're complaining, but this isn't really complaining stuff. This is just honestly looking at this.
No, I agree. I just don't want to complain about it too much.
So it's not more of a complaint. I think this is a great feature. I think there's no reason like now to have it hidden behind a double tap. So I totally agree with that direction that
yeah.
It probably should just be there. And how you activate it, you know, whatever. That's up for debate, but all around good new feature.
Yeah.
If it's real.
Yeah, if it's real. that's the thing, really. So there have been a lot of photos of iPad 3 parts. There have been back casings that have been slightly tweaked. According to Repair Labs, they got a photo of the inside of the what appears to be the iPad 3 back shell. And according to them, it looks like there's a lot less space for the logic board and way more space for the battery.
Which would make sense.
Yeah.
Sure.
Which is good. We want that. There's a rumor, I think it was Joshua Topolsky of The Verge, says that according to his sources, the A6, the rumored A6 that will be in the iPad 3 is going to be dual core only. His track record.
Ooh.
Yeah. We're not sure about that. I'm not going to say either way. It'll be interesting to see.
I think both.
Meh. We were talking about simplicity, Adam.
I know, but again, Apple's not behaving in that way.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
So I think the entry-level iPad will be possibly a dual core and then two top-end models. If Apple sticks with three models, two higher-end models with quad cores.
Boo. Don't like.
Me neither.
Okay. So we also got a photo of the back of the iPad 3 case. The camera's been moved slightly, it appears, and nothing much else has changed. And it does appear that the smart cover, the current smart cover that we have, will be compatible with it. It already it still has magnets, which would totally make sense. There is a rumor from All Things D, which has a good track record, that we will see the iPad 3 announced in the first week of March. Jim Dalrymple agrees, which is always good to hear from him.
That's a good sign.
Yep. And what was it? I think we actually had a hard date. Was it the March 6th, March 7th?
March 7th.
And again, so we heard that from iMore, which used to be Tippy, the iPhone blog. Jim Dalrymple also gives a nod of approval with that. So he also believes that March 7th is the day. There was a rumor of LTE, 4G LTE. iMore isn't even that convinced that it's going to be LTE, and Jim Dalrymple did not say anything about that.
I don't think there's any... they're still not ready.
Yeah.
And was there it even... didn't HTC, the CEO, come out and say, yep, we did 4G too early? Was it him? One of the smartphone manufacturers came out and said, yeah, we probably shouldn't have done 4G because the batteries suck.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, I think it was the HTC CEO said, yeah, we rolled it out too early. Everybody hates the phones because they die. And
yeah, it makes sense. There's
very little 4G coverage anywhere anyway.
Exactly. and so we saw the back cover. We saw some flex cables a few weeks ago. We saw what seemed to be a very slightly tweaked display that we assumed based on connectors and stuff was going to be a higher resolution, although it couldn't be powered up for some reason. I guess just because we don't have the proper stuff to do that.
I'm willing to say that the HD double resolution, you know, retina display is a given at this point.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, they've what was it? I believe it there was somebody, it was 9to5 Mac or somebody that, 11AB. I don't know what this, IAB.cc has taken all these parts and fitted them together. They say they all fit like a glove. So all these parts definitely are seemingly for the iPad. And I'm getting your messages, by the way.
Yeah. Yep, okay. It's all working now.
they're trying to distract me. They're trying to distract me as I'm talking with messages. and then finally, Mac Rumors, they're calling confirmed on the iPad 3 having a 2048 by 1536 retina display based on the fact...
Isn't that what I just said?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Based on the fact that they have one of these displays that I guess did fit perfectly in the back case. And what they did was they put it under a microscope and they counted pixels, and it seems to have a 4x4 instead of a 2x2. So it, quit distracting me, Jeff.
It is very distracting, especially when you have I have messages on OS X and then my iPhone next to that and the iPad next to that. And it's like, bing, bing, bing. They're going like 1, 2, 3.
You've got like some kind of alarm message or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, hey, it's looking like iPad 3 is going to be nice and tasty.
It seems totally reasonable. Okay.
Is it really? Somebody pointed out, and I think this is probably true. You know, it's like overall, if you look at everything that's going to be in it, it's, you know, 20% better than what you have now.
Well, it's going to be faster. It's going to have that higher resolution display. I think that higher resolution display is going to sell a lot of units. I think a lot of people have been waiting for that. And maybe not so much because it's entirely justified. I think it's just because they want it.
Well, and I'm totally with that. But I think much like we saw with the iPhone 4, I do believe these rumors that they'll continue to sell the iPad 2 at a lower price point. And I think that's almost going to be the bigger thing for most people. You know, those of us who care about fastest, latest, and greatest are going to, you know, I'm going to be getting an iPad 3, and a lot of people are going to love them, and they're going to do very, very well. But I think we're going to be shocked again to find out how many iPad 2s Apple continues to sell at a lower price point, because...
Lower than what it's currently at?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. The majority of the people... can get by with an iPad 2 and are going to be very, very happy with that device. You know, it's like there's not enough in the iPad 3 to make it generations better. It's a nice evolution, but it's not, you know, I think the 20% number that somebody threw out, I think, was totally arbitrary. You know, it was just subjective and them saying, well, it's about 20% better when you look at faster processor graphics, you know, looking at the rumored specs. But it's definitely not, it's not like a whole new device. Like, the iPad 2 doesn't suddenly become insignificant or not a good device.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm really happy with my iPad 2 and the speed and everything.
The iPad 2 is really nice.
Yeah, so it's going to be one of those things where if someone's got an iPad 2 and you're like, should I upgrade, should I not, application's going to dictate, you know, how they use the device and what they want to do on it is really going to dictate that decision more than this is a must-have upgrade.
Yeah, and I would like to see the iPad 2 being sold for a lower price point. As long as they can make those prices work, I think they would definitely like to do that. It would certainly broaden the market.
Be nice.
It would also be
lower.
Nice for education market.
Yeah, absolutely.
Be nicer than the rumor is $100 less than the current base model, and I would assume they'd drop down to only one model. Hopefully,
probably.
It wouldn't be the 16 gig model, but probably will be.
I'm sure it will. I mean, that's what I use.
That would make sense.
I'm
that's
fine
what they've
with
done
16.
With the iPhone line.
Yeah,
it'd be nice if it was the 32 at $399 or $299. It's $399 the current bottom of the line model price, right?
Yes.
I'm taking that silence as you guys don't know.
I was
we can't remember.
Yes, that's right.
$299 for what now?
It'd be nice if it was a 32 iPad 2 for $299.
Yeah, not
the,
happening.
As the bottom of the line model,
not
but
happening.
It's probably going to be 16
for $399.
That's what I was asking, is what's the current bottom of line price
of
an iPad?
It's $499.
Yeah, so $399.
That's why I didn't understand what you were talking about when you said $299.
And I was running wrong numbers in my head. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's $500 for the bottom. So I think we'll get to four.
Yeah, I think I wish it would be lower. I think it needs to be a little bit lower than that.
Well, I mean,
I think the prices across the board need to be lower, frankly, with the other devices that are coming out on the market.
Yeah, well, you can buy like a pallet of Nooks for the price of an iPad, right?
Yeah, but that's just yeah. that's just my wants, though. By the way, I will point out that Apple, for their profit margins and for the company, is not going to need to lower the prices. They're going to sell a metric buttload, and I think that's a scientific term.
Yeah,
of iPad 3s at the current pricing.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not yawning because I'm bored. I'm yawning just because I'm tired. But all right. So what else we got?
I want to call into question the earlier statement that that the story of the week was the announcement of Mountain Lion.
Well, in my opinion,
I think the story of the week was actually how Apple rolled Mountain Lion out to the press.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. The big thing for me was it was completely unceremonious. It was, hey, here it is. What?
Well, no,
hold on,
but
what?
They held private meetings with bloggers.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
A week in advance of the announcement.
And it's interesting who they held their meetings with, because it was like, okay, David Pogue from the New York Times.
Did he get invited?
I'm sure he did, because
Rush Limbaugh claims he didn't.
No, well, then Pogue came back and said he was.
But David had all the info
I don't
right
Rush,
away.
By the way,
yeah.
Right?
Oh,
so the
but then it's and of course Jason Snell from Macworld, and Jim Dalrymple from The Loop. But it was interesting who didn't get invited. You know, like Mac Observer, we didn't get invited. Ars Technica didn't. Andy Anatko from Chicago Sun Times, he found out about it just the way we all did, where it was like, oh, crap, this just happened? What? So it's very interesting who was pre-briefed and who wasn't.
So the New York Times was pre-briefed.
Right.
Yes,
they had to have been. They had to have been, because David had all this stuff right away. So that would indicate a pre-briefing, and he just didn't say, I was pre-briefed.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's unprecedented for Apple in any way, shape, or form. And I hope it continues, and I hope that their list broadens. Yeah, I don't know how they picked who they picked either, Jeff, but, you know, hopefully they're going to do that sort of thing. And I forget who mentioned it. Somebody thought that it might, you know, part of the reason why they might have done this is because they're rolling it out in between kind of two big announcements, between the iBook textbook thing and then the pending iPad 3.
Oh, right. Thing. Yeah, I think it was Gruber that suggested
But
that.
Why didn't they just wait until WWDC, as they've done every year since 2000?
Because they're going to be, by the time WWDC rolls around, they're releasing, I mean, not long after. They said summer, so it could be September, right? But they're going to be releasing mountain lions. So developers have to get their software ready. So they have to have it now. That gives, I think it's better for developers. It's going to give them much more time to roll in the new, some of the new features and support and stuff like that that they need to put into their apps.
Right. And we may be seeing new features with the next iOS update that fit in tighter with Mountain Lion.
Oh, so, that's true too, yeah.
You know, so these features would become apparent anyhow. And if developers need to be working with those features, okay, well, this stuff should be out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, people from Apple PR actually in a meeting with a reporter, like, you can talk to them. This never happened.
Yeah, that's unprecedented.
Yeah. So I think we're going to be seeing, you know, this age of a lot of the secrecy seems to be lifting a little bit. And I don't know.
No me gusta.
Then, you know, that's just it. The next debate is that good or is that bad?
I think it's bad. I don't want to get too deep on this. I think we'll maybe have longer discussions about the ending of the Steve Jobs era and what things seem to be affected by that.
Yep.
But this is definitely a big example of that.
Oh, there's been a ton in the last month. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So Apple has, so I guess, let's see, a pair of U.S. congressmen sent a letter to Apple requesting information on privacy practices regarding address book data and how certain applications have been known to, in the past, and I think we've reported on a couple of these, that some applications were secretly harvesting address book data for various uses. And Apple, hours later, issued a statement to All Things D saying that they're planning to, in a future iOS update, make it so that applications have to ask the user before it can actually get access to any of the address book data. And I think that's a very good thing.
Yeah. Hey, so just... So because I want to feel good about myself, I guess, and knowing my stuff, the unofficial Apple web blog did report that Pogue did not get invited to the pre-briefing for Mountain Lion. And that was confirmed by Pogue and Andy Anatko to the unofficial Apple web blog that neither of them got invited. And the theory on Pogue's not being invited is because of the New York Times piece on the factories in China. But that's just speculation.
All right.
That Apple is not happy with the New York Times anymore.
Interesting.
Whether that's true or not, I don't believe that. But
yeah, I don't believe that either. But okay, so David didn't get invited. Andy didn't get invited.
So now it's even stranger.
Yeah, now it's even stranger.
Okay, sorry. Didn't want to derail us, but now I feel better about myself.
That's cool.
And that's what really counts. So good for you.
Yeah, as long as Adam feels good about himself, then the podcast can proceed.
Right.
So I guess it'll be interesting to see if it's a one tap and it always has access, or if it's going to be a every time you want to access it, it's going to ask about it.
I would assume it would be every single app that wants to access your address book info.
And it'll be a one-time thing, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
As a programmer, can I bring up a beef with this whole situation and this
yes,
whole
please.
Thing? And this is something that I talked with George Starcher, who's my resident go-to Apple security expert guy. Because after this whole fiasco came out, I was thinking about it, you know, from my programming knowledge, and I went, you know, functionality for a lot of these apps, the whole point behind this is they want to be able to tell me if I sign up for a service that, hey, Michael also signed up for the service and Michael's in your address book, so do you want to connect with Michael, right?
Right.
So that's the end game, is to somehow match my information in my address book with the information that is in your account, assuming it's your email address. That's mostly what they're interested in. But maybe they want to have more accuracy, so they want to combine email address with a phone number with your first name, last name in the address book, right? Okay?
Right.
So the point is that they do not need, there's no reason at all that they need your address book data to be able to perform that matching. And excuse me for getting a little bit technical here, but, you know, they could take the information in the address book and within the app obfuscate that, basically generate a hashed key pattern and do something called salting and basically send an encrypted just string that gets stored in their database that when they take the information from now your address, so say this is my address book and they take your contact data, Michael, and they use whatever, you know, pieces of that they want to do the matching on, run it together, encrypt it, and then send that up to their servers, and that's what they store in their database. And then when you sign up for the service, all they would have to do is perform that same process yeah. on your data. And if the two hashed encrypted strings match, they know that that's a match, and they can say, hey, you know, Adam's on the service too. Do you want to connect to him? And then they could connect our accounts in their database using non-identifiable, encrypted, protected information. So really what they're doing is they're just taking the lazy route because it's much easier just to grab a giant copy of the address book and upload that to their servers.
Yeah.
So it's just when you start thinking about security and what these guys are doing and people ask, you know, ultimately your security and your protection of your personal information is going to come down to you. And so when these dialogues come up, you have to really think about what they're doing. But then also I'm starting to ask the question, why? Why do they need this information? And I think we need to start demanding more of them that, you know, you don't need my entire address book. And even more simplifying it, can they just send the email address? Do you have to take all the phone numbers and the addresses and everything? Absolutely not.
No,
so why are these guys doing this? And it comes down to they're lazy. They're taking an easy, lazy route. And that is what's more irritating and frustrating to me about this stuff. Beyond just the invasion of privacy. But, I mean, even now that they ask, I would still question, and I'm not letting Path upload my address book to do matching. I'll do my matching on my own. You know, I'll ask you, Michael, if you have a Path account and you know, what is it and connect to you that way. But, you know, I would encourage more people to stop letting these guys take that information from you.
I think that's an excellent call. And I'm going to go a step further and say services that want your Facebook or Twitter credentials to allow you to log in and set up an account, don't.
What if that's the only option, though?
Then you don't use the service. That's why I haven't signed up for Pinterest, even though I wanted to test it and I have friends that are using it. I don't have a Pinterest account because they want my Facebook or my Twitter credentials.
Well,
and the answer
is no. Do they want your credentials or do they want you to authenticate through OAuth, which is a whole different thing? So that's maybe something that's a little bit confusing that people don't understand either.
Yeah, they're not saying.
Well, if the process of when you log in with one of those services, if the process is to bring up the little dialogue that you get that's from Facebook or from Twitter and says, do you want to authorize this application? The way OAuth works is this is the better way of doing things because they don't get any information. They get security tokens that go back and forth. And what's great about that is if you ever want to disconnect that service from your Twitter account, you actually log into your Twitter account and you deauthorize that app and suddenly it can't have access. So if your Pinterest account got hacked or something like that, you can just literally deauthorize that application from Twitter or from Facebook. And that's more the right way to do this single sign-on authentication stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they need to explain that. Yeah,
that
doesn't
aren't.
Bother me as much. But
and like Pinterest, I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I asked them. They never bothered to tell me. So I thought, okay, well, I don't trust you.
Yeah, yeah. And again, what concerns me more, especially with the Facebook stuff, is when they say, okay, let us into your Facebook, but also let us access all of your Facebook contacts and, you know, like that list of things that you're authorizing them to be able to do on your behalf through that application. That is the thing that I think most people aren't paying attention to and suddenly don't realize that, wow, these guys have access to every one of my friends and friends of friends and all of their information that's in my Facebook account. And why do they need, the bigger question is, why do they need that? If it's just to match accounts, they don't need all of that information. They need a very small subset. And even then, I would question, you know, can they do it in another better anonymized and better protected way? I don't know. It's getting rampant.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a
on the
problem.
Internet. Yeah. So I'm glad this stuff happened this week and that you know, people are starting to question these guys because I think they're getting flippant and brash. And the other thing I want to point out, though, is none of this stuff is new. You know, this is just, it's increased by the ease of access and the amount of access that digital technologies provide. But, you know, think of all the times that you filled out some, you know, paper form for some contest to win a car somewhere, and the amount of information that you've given to people in the past, even in an analog world. So digital makes it just that much more easy for this stuff to get passed around.
Yeah.
Right. Which is why I get so creeped out when a service says, okay, you want a new account? Give us your Twitter credentials or your Facebook credentials.
Yeah. And then it says, oh, and then you're giving them permission to post and message your mom and do all this stuff. And I don't understand why.
Well, and right. It gets worse too with, you know, file sharing and photo sharing too, with all the metadata that people don't realize is in these files.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I'm and like, I think, to write, like you can, I see Spotify constantly in my Facebook feed now, and I'm not sure people really, it doesn't make sense that people would want to just blast everything they're listening to. I feel like a lot of it is because you can sign in with Spotify into Spotify with Facebook. People just say, oh, I have Facebook. Okay. I want to type less. Okay. Just click, done. And they don't realize that stuff is happening now.
You mean like that time when you said, are you really listening to Clay Aiken?
Yeah. I think that was probably a really good example of that. Were you really listening to Clay Aiken? I don't know that I got a response. I guess you were caught, right?
There is a Clay Aiken track, I believe, in my iTunes, and I do listen to iTunes on shuffle, so half the time I'm probably not even really listening.
Yeah, I bet you're not, till Clay Aiken comes on.
And then I am.
And then it all stops.
Yeah. All right. Let's do the iDevice picks now. Ready for that?
Woo!
Adam?
Dude, I have an awesome one.
Yeah, is it going to be... Well, okay, go. I don't want to...
It's called Life of George. Okay. Do you guys know about Life of George?
I don't.
No.
Ha-ha. This is a game. It's a puzzle game, but the key is it's a Lego game. And when I say Lego, I mean physical, actual Legos. So you get a box of Legos. Ooh. in the thing. It's $30. And then it has a little game board. It looks like a bunch of little dots, a little dot pattern. And you play this character, George. You download the app for free. And then you play this. The idea is you're this character, George, and you go through these levels and you're given little puzzles that you have to build out of the physical Legos that you have. So you get timed and it starts out in different locations. I'm trying to remember, you know, I have like a beach and there's a pirate themed level and there's different themed levels, and you build objects related to whatever that level might be. So it might be a coffee cup or a turtle or a guitar. And you have to construct that physically out of the Legos, and then you use the camera on your iPhone or your iPad to take a picture of the model, and then it determines how accurately you recreated the model. And
oh,
then you
cool.
get points scored based on that.
That's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it's a little like a little puzzle game, but with physical, actual Legos, and you use the camera, and it's just it's a ton of fun. Very challenging, though. I don't know how to get the top scores, because you would have to build incredibly quickly. So if you want to hone up on your Lego skills, I think this is a good Lego trainer as well.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah, but it's $30 for the physical, and you get, you know, 144 physical Legos and the little game board and stuff like that, and then the app is free to download. So, and I got this at, you know, I live near Legoland, so we were at Legoland recently, and I bought it there. But I think you can get it through Toys R Us or Lego Shop or wherever. And I love it. It's great. And then they have in-app purchase for, like, they have, like, a holiday-themed level. So it looks like they're going to be adding on additional levels and things like that as in-app purchase as the game goes on. So
awesome. Life of George. It's free, but it requires...
It does require the Legos and the little... I think the key is this little the little physical board, because that's how it determines, you know, whether or not you got the pieces in the right place.
Yeah, but then you can probably just use whatever Legos.
Yeah, I don't know if the... I think the colors come into play, too. Like, you know, you have to have the right kind of colored Legos, but it uses all the primary colors, white, black, red, blue, green, yellow.
Gotcha. Cool. Jeff, what is your pick?
I think mine's cool, but I don't think it's quite as cool as Adam's. Mine is called Trains Simulator, and it's T-R-A-I-N-Z. And this is an iPad app that lets you build realistic train layouts.
Oh.
And so you start with a blank, flat, empty grid. And so you build your terrain. And then after you build your terrain, then you can start building your layout of track and then add in buildings and houses and stuff. And then you add in your trains and then you let your trains run. And then you can have weather happening with your trains. And it's a very cool, realistic train simulator. So if you like playing with model trains, and you want to play with model trains on your iPad, here you go.
Yeah. And it's only
a lot of fun.
It's only 99 cents, which seems like...
I think it's on sale right now.
Okay. It's because it kind of seems like they're shooting themselves in the foot. Being
no, I think it's.
Cents.
I think they temporarily lowered the price. I think it's like a $5 game.
Yeah.
I think I bought it when it was $5 and it's way worth it. It's a lot of fun.
It looks like there's a lot there.
Very challenging. It's very detailed and very accurate in terms of, I think, how you have to like operate things. I'm constantly crashing the train because I can't figure out how to like couple it. You literally can couple and decouple cars and like do all this kinds of like fancy stuff. And
right. And yeah. And if you have friends that have made routes, train routes, and you're having trouble figuring out how to build your own, they can give you their routes. So you can share your train layouts.
Oh, neat. All right. Well, it's called Trains with a Z instead of an S Simulator, and it's 99 cents. Now, my app is called Fingal. Have you guys seen Fingal?
No, but knowing you, I can only imagine.
Yeah. It sounds dirty.
Yeah, it probably should sound dirty, because it's kind of fun in a frisky sort of way. So the way it works.
Oh, okay. This is clever.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like Twister for your fingers, and you truly, truly need someone else to play this with you. It will not work if you're trying to do it yourself. Your brain won't work to make it happen. So what happens is you have a white block and you have a yellow block. And so one person is yellow, one person's white, and you have to get the blocks into the corresponding colors. So you move one block into the other, into the little container, and then you have the other person move their block into the container, and it has to stay there for a certain period of time while there's a white circle that kind of grows from the center. So you have to keep it in the spot for like 5 seconds or so. Now it's really easy when you're doing the very first one, but then suddenly those little containers where you have to keep your blocks start moving, or they're in places that are a little bit tricky to get to while your friend is doing the same thing. So you end up doing some very, very suggestive things with each other's fingers. And it's a lot of fun if you... To play with your lady or a prospective lady, if you want to start getting a little bit fingally with her. Play a little bit of Fingal. Like footsie, it's Fingal. And it's really fun. It's like I've played this with a couple girls, and they get a huge kick out of it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's an iPhone-only game.
No, it's iPad.
iPad only, right?
iPad.
Yeah.
You're not looking at the
right. It'd be kind of hard to play on the iPhone.
Oh, I see now. Okay.
Yeah.
Be a little bit tight.
Yeah, it's
I guess if you want to get really close.
Really, really. Yeah. No, it's lots of fun. It's really cool. I highly recommend it. It's only 99 cents. So.
There you go. Pick and dating tip.
Exactly. Yeah, very much
all rolled
so.
Into one.
Yeah, there you go. With that, of course, you can find all of the show notes and our picks that we make at each week at wehavecommunicators.com. So if you're driving, don't worry about it. You don't have to worry about the URL or even what it's called. You can just remember that he was talking about that thing with the fingers, and you go to the website and there it is. It's called Fingal, and it's only 99 cents and you can click on the link. And so it's really easy. Of course, you can find the show notes there too. All the links to the stuff that we talk about. And I'll be putting the link to Air Server that Adam talked about earlier in there as well. You can.
Can I bring up something about the website?
Yeah, sure.
Because I got asked at Macworld.
Okay.
Someone wanted to know if we're ever actually going to
make a theme for it.
Design it, yeah.
I mean, I got a lot of stuff going on, guys, and we're doing this show.
They pointed out that the screenshot for each episode
says iPhone LA. I know. I'm aware of it. I see it every time I do it. It's just
And it's a nice first gen iPhone. Too.
I like that part about it. I might not change that. So it's been an hour. We've been recording for an hour and 22 minutes. I was preparing today while I was doing a million other things. figuring out stuff.
I'm just delivering. Don't shoot the messenger. I'm not delivering you. I'm just delivering the information from the fans.
I'm telling all the listeners right now this because you know that it's a lot of work. You do a show.
Yes.
And let's
I don't think
see.
He was complaining. He was just asking if there were any plans for it. So just say yes, and we'll move on.
No, it's not. I did a lot of work by changing it from the default Drupal theme. And there's comments in there. I get notifications when you guys comment. That's another thing. So if you want to move it
to WordPress, I might be able to help out with the design thing.
I like Drupal.
I'm not going to do the Drupal
thing.
That's
fine.
So I think what we need to do is if you are a designer and a Drupal developer, email Michael.
I don't know.
And you're willing to work for free.
You'd have to work for very much free. but like I was saying, if you want to comment, you got a question, a comment about just an episode, maybe you want to just say something real quick. You don't want to call in or do anything like that. You can start a discussion on the page. So if you go to wehavecommunicators.com and you're looking through the show notes and you have something you want to say, we got a discus down there.
Nice.
So that's really easy. And I reply to people who use the discus and, what else is there? Oh, of course, you can contact us. We got the phone number 202-642-6667. You can call us and leave a message about a question or comment you have there. Email feedback.
Or say three random words and see how the speech-to-text translator handles it.
Yeah, that's always fun. Jeff likes to do that from time to time. feedback at wehavecommunicators.com. You can send an email or an audio comment that way as well. That one's real easy for me, actually. That's the preferred way. If you want to have me potentially play something on the show, then go that route. What else do we have here? I guess advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. So if you want to advertise, do that. They're awesome. What? There was something else I wanted to say. I can't remember what it is. I guess it's not that important, right? Oh, Jeff Gamet's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, at Jay Gamet on Twitter. And
right. Was that the not important thing?
No, that was the important thing.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking it was something more than what I usually do in terms of letting everybody know how to contact us, but that's just what I was thinking, is that I need to let people know that you're at Jay Gamet on Twitter. And that you can find your stuff, your Zazzle drawings on Zazzle.com/JGamut on various things, including the We Have Communicators mug. Adam Christensen's at the Mattcast, Mattcast.com. He's at Mattcast on Twitter. And you can find the member version of the Mattcast at member.mattcast.com.
Well, that's right.
I am at Michael Johnston on Twitter. If you want to send me stuff about the show or doesn't have to, I don't care, unrelated cool things, do that. I also do at Little Reviews, so I review various things, mostly beer, I think. Beer and food. Those are primarily the things that I like to check out. And I'm getting into wine, so maybe I'll start talking about wine there, like a fool. So, because I know nothing about wine. It's only beer at this point, but who knows? And with that, do you have anything else you want to mention? Say? Blurt out that I might have to beep Jeff.
No, I'll go easy on you today.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, then with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. A phone. Unity.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.